does have it all. All of our pre-owned vehicles are Hubler Q certified, which include a 128-point vehicle inspection, a free Carfax vehicle history report, and two warranties. A two-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty and a 30-day, 1,000-mile comprehensive warranty. Visit any of our 13 locations today or click drivehubler.com. Hubler has
it all. This morning on the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy.
Mark, is this from the Hills?
I used to love that.
It is. My college roommate, freshman roommate, and I had a debate of who was hotter, Kristen Cavallari or LC.
Now that's scorching. That's LeBron MJ type.
Yeah, I mean, we went to battle.
That's Brady Manning.
It's Kristen, and you're wrong. Go sleep in the hall.
You're like Stephen A. Smith arguing with somebody over that.
Skipping Stephen A. right there.
Skip Bayless back in the day.
That takes coming out in the dorm at Esch Hall back in the University of Indianapolis days.
So my IU poll is about ready to close, guys. You want to hear the results?
Yeah, let's go. So you put it up what time? Yesterday?
Yeah, put it up late in the show yesterday.
That's what I thought.
Looking back on it, I should have put in all the above on there. IU fans, how do you feel about Purdue's Final Four run? That was the question. The three choices, you respect it, you're jealous of it, you hope they lose by 100. Again, I should have put in all the above. Respect it after, what are we at? I think around 3,000 votes. Respect it is 53%. Jealous of it, 17%. Hope they lose by 100, 30%.
Yeah, you're not supposed to believe what you see on Twitter X, and I hate to say it. I love your poll question. It has over 3,000 votes, but I ain't buying it. I mean, Indiana
fans. Hope they lose
fans,
by 100, you think should be higher?
Hope they lose by 100, only having 30% of the vote. It crushes what I think of Indiana fans. I don't like it. That's got to be 60% of the vote. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Kentucky-Louisville, it would look different, wouldn't it?
It probably would. I'm still stunned that it doesn't look different here with IU and Purdue. The only thing I can think of is, A, Purdue hasn't won the title. There's a difference between Final Four and title. And maybe, B, I don't know, do you feel good slash, I don't know, do you feel better for Purdue given that they haven't been there in 44 years? That would be, you know, it's not like they haven't been there in 15 years. It's been 44 years since they haven't been there.
Part of me is like, some of these IU fans probably live in Newcastle or Westfield or Silver Creek or Fort Wayne. I'm like, wait,
Clarksville,
do they have the allegiances to Trey Kaufman Wren and Mason Gillis and Brayden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer? Is that, you know,
see, in the,
at play
in
here?
The southern part
there's
of the
too
state,
much Indiana flavor
exactly.
on this Purdue
in the,
roster.
The problem they also have in the southern part of the state, they have to worry about the other obnoxious fan bases like Louisville and Kentucky. So those Indiana fans are not only at war with Purdue, okay? They're also at war, if you will, with a couple other fan bases. So it's a good poll question. Couple hours if you want to go vote on that.
We'll get back into Pacers. Scott Agnes coming up at 8:30. Again, really looking forward to Konzo Martin joining us at 9:30. But we'll certainly focus here on the Colts and that Stephon Diggs move yesterday and just the domino effect off of that. I actually want to start with the tweet from Zaire Franklin yesterday, and you know, I don't know if I need to throw in the caveat, but I love Zaire's candor. I love his leadership, all of that, and I've thoroughly enjoyed him as a guest. And he tweeted out the very, I think, cliche player tweet that you see. And the tweet was this after that Diggs news and a couple hours had passed with it. Zaire goes, "I see we lost the offseason Super Bowl again. Better luck next year." And, you know, obviously, goes without saying, Andy, there's a ton of validity behind what happens in March and April. Certainly doesn't mean results in September and October. But I think there is a wide, wide range of celebrating a Super Bowl win in the offseason versus doing anything of substance. And that's where I would push back on the premise of just that tweet in general of, you know, the issue, Zaire, would be the Colts have only had the chance to compete for the Super Bowl two times in the last decade when you look at their playoff appearances. That is the issue, and if you look at the consistent theme, it's been largely a lack of activity during the time of year where you make veteran acquisitions, whether that be trades or whether that be through free agency. And, you know, I keep on coming back to this with Chris Ballard. I'd call him stubborn, and I think when you're in positions of authority, Andy, it's very easy to fall into a stubbornness category. You know, you've reached that level. You've obviously accomplished a whole lot in your professional career.
Sure.
For someone to look at you in that light. But let's just use the two names we've probably talked about the most here on this show. Hell, even today so far. Let's look at Josh Ertz and let's look at Matt Painter. Josh Ertz, for those unfamiliar with his background, He visited Bill Self in Kansas back in the day, and he was enamored with that beautiful high-low that Bill Self was running. He said, we're going to bring that back to Lincoln Memorial, and we're going to run that. And they have great success. They win 30 games, and they make these D2 tournament runs. And then one day, he goes and visits Brad Stevens, and he's blown away by the five-out concept in the NBA, which, you know, certainly the Chris Bosh Heat teams and those Celtics teams became more and more prevalent. And he went back to his staff at Lincoln Memorial, and he said, screw it. We're blowing up our offense. We're running this. And, like, the staff looked at him like, wait, what?
We have to go recruit all new players,
and,
right?
And he's like, no. We can't continue to do the same thing. And they've had great success, to be fair. Certainly success the Colts haven't sniffed. So they tweaked it. They made changes. Matt Painter, okay, Andy, if he wanted to, he could play the stubborn card and say, you know what? We're a one seed. We just won the Big Ten by multiple games. That Fairleigh Dickinson game, it was a fluke. That's not going to happen again. No way. We're going to do the exact same thing. What did he do? No, I'm hiring an analytics guy in the offseason. You dive deep into it. Tell me what needs to be changed. Okay, you think we need to dial back practices in February? We're going to do that. What was their record this year closing out the year versus last year? Much, much different. Much, much better record. You look at their team itself. They've made some, I think, tweaks from a personnel standpoint. You know, the Ethan Morton, Caleb First has turned into the Miles Colvin, you know, Cam Heidi.
They've done that they did it before the season, but they also did it during the season.
Right. And so, again, these are guys that, you know, had great success. It's probably unfair to compare Matt Painter's resume and Josh Schertz's resume to even Chris Ballard's resume. But these are guys in positions of authority that have chosen to do things differently and not be stubborn, bang your head against the wall. And that's probably my biggest frustration with the Ballard era. It's stubbornness, in my opinion, in how he's handled this time of year. It's stubbornness in sticking with the same defensive scheme, even though the coordinators have changed largely. I think when you look at the draft pick investment, it's not enough in the premium positions early on in the draft. And obviously there's been misses at, I would say, the two most critical spots in your defense when it comes to the pass rush and the edge rush and cornerback when they have made investments there. So that's where I think my big takeaway is from yesterday. You know, you can question Diggs. You can question the age of it. I think people are a little overreacting to Stephon Diggs and acting like he's, you know, Andre Johnson 2.0. But more than anything, I just think the stubbornness after 7 years of little success to give you the right to be stubborn has got to be the most frustrating aspect for Colts fans.
I tell you what, I think there are a ton of angles here, KB. I got to be honest. Like, I am fascinated that the Bills, just to go to them for a second, the Bills wanted Stephon Diggs so badly off their roster that they only got a second rounder. They ate over $31 million, one of the top five dead money hits in the history of the NFL. By the way, who's number two on that list? I believe is Matt Ryan, if I'm not mistaken, on that list. They were willing to get little back, eat a bunch of money, and leave themselves, help me here, the other wide receiver that left them this offseason, Gabe Davis, to leave themselves in quite a bad spot at wide receiver. So that, to me, is interesting. And the Bills are helping out a team that is right there and may have even passed them in contending in the AFC. I think for Colts fans, there's a couple things. Immediately yesterday, this is not about Diggs. It's not about Diggs. It's about L'Jarius Sneed. It's about other players that the Colts may have wanted this offseason that wasn't team run it back. I mean, that's what this is. Because Colts fans understand, I mean, Diggs is a nice player, but there was no way that they were going to carry him well into his 30s, mid-30s, paying another wide receiver after you paid this offseason a guy like Michael Pittman Jr. The thing, though, that resonates is right now, Ballard, it is such a battle between he and the fan base. The fan base is done with Chris Ballard. And to me, yesterday wasn't about even team run it back. It was, they're so tired of Ballard that's the sins of the past. They don't want to even hear, most Colts fans, Well, you know, Diggs is old. Or look at, you know, if you go out and get a wide receiver in this draft, put what the Texans have next to. I saw Joe Mixon getting a lot of run. Well, Jonathan Taylor's better than Joe Mixon. Pittman Jr. could have a better season next year than Stephon Diggs. Colts fans woke up yesterday, they got this news in the afternoon, and they felt it even clubbing them over the head even more, KB, that the Texans have passed them by. And the Texans had to hit rock bottom to get some of those picks. They had to get, by the way, people need to remember as well, I know I'm throwing a lot out here, the Texans had to have the most ridiculous trade, one of the more ridiculous trades in the history of the NFL, to be in the spot that they're in with Deshaun Watson. I mean, that goes up there with, I put this on Twitter yesterday, with Pau Gasol in the Lakers. Remember that trade? What went down there? It's like, how did the Lakers get Gasol for nothing? How did this happen? It changed their entire organization. Them being able to fleece and find someone as stupid as the Cleveland Browns helped turn their franchise around, and they built pretty damn fast. But there's nothing, listen, I'm not backing Chris Ballard at all here. I don't think Colts fans wanted Stephon Diggs. This is not about Diggs. This is about another team in the AFC, one right here in the AFC South that was a dumpster fire organization not even a year and a half ago, passing you. That's how everyone feels. Colts fans, media, national media, and everybody else. And then I think it goes back to what you're talking about. Every single Colts fan told me, hey, Andy, it's your first offseason with Chris Ballard. He ain't going to do a damn thing. He's going to re-sign players. They're not going to go out and take a stab at it, take a chance at it. While they have a quarterback under their rookie deal, they're not going to do it. And lo and behold, here we are. And yesterday was just a bad day for Ballard taking strays. It really was.
I don't think it's as big of a swing and a risk as everyone's making it out for Houston. Certainly, they're giving up a second-round pick. It's not even their own second-rounder. They have another one. That's from Minnesota, this second-rounder. Andy, Stephon Diggs can come off the books next year.
It's a no-brainer for them.
From a contractual standpoint. So I don't view it. And again, Andre Johnson, I mean, Diggs had 1,200 yards last year and 100 catches. Like, it's not like he was falling off. Certainly there are some antics there that, you know, have got to be ironed out. And, you know, we'll see how D'Amico Ryans and that staff can handle everything. But you look at their wideout group with Diggs and Nico Collins and Tank Dell, and you look at them bringing back Dalton Schultz, and who knows what Joe Mixon will give them. But they also retained their offensive coordinator and Bobby Slowick. I mean, that was a huge storyline
right
at the start of the offseason. And if you just want to look at this move directly impacting the Colts, Houston gives their young budding star quarterback a weapon. Well, you can argue how significant of a weapon he is. And it happens at the position of your biggest weakness or your biggest question mark in it being corner. And, you know, what you see with Houston right now is they are taking, and other teams in the AFC South, let's just focus on Houston, they are taking advantage of the rookie contract. And that is something that I view as a missed opportunity here in Indy. Because I would say if I have a grand takeaway from Anthony Richardson last year, and it's probably premature, Andy, for me to even label it like that, but in 173 snaps, I walk away from the Richardson experience thinking this: wow, he might hit a level that's pretty high a lot earlier than I thought.
Right. Maybe a year earlier or a half year earlier. Sure.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe I thought this was a 2 or 3 year wait period with him. And now I'm thinking, boy, you could get some return on investment a little bit quicker than that. Obviously, it's a credit to Shane Steichen. It's a credit to Chris Ballard for seeing some of that and Anthony Richardson. Certainly, it's a credit to Richardson as well. Having said that, I do worry about the long-term longevity, I guess, of him. I mean, is this a guy that's going to play into year, whatever, 8, 9, 10, with this playing style? That's a lot to ask. And I know we did this exercise back when he got injured, so I won't bring it back up. But, you know, whether you look at McNair or Vic or some of these guys that did have a little bit more of a dual threat nature early in their careers, they just didn't sustain that throughout their entire careers. So given that, if you do believe that, all right, we can get there quicker, but I don't know if we're going to get there into the 2030s, then I view this as even more of a time to maximize it, more of a time to take these chances. Because if you look at the AFC, Kansas City hit a point where they couldn't keep Tyreek Hill. Buffalo's hit a point where they cannot keep Stephon Diggs.
Right.
You know, even Cincinnati has gotten to a point where it's like, you know what? Yes, Ja'Marr Chase, but no with T. Higgins. And no with Joe Mixon.
And Tyler Boyd. And Boyd, yeah. I mean, they
Tyler
get rid
Boyd
of three
well.
Big players, yeah.
So that's where I look at it. Teams eventually get there. The Colts, they would love to get there because that means Richardson has been a hit. So don't miss this window where you can maximize it. You can go up to the, if you make the baseball analogy, the Texans, the Colts, the Titans, the Jags, they walk to the plate right now, Andy. It's the bottom of the ninth with no strikes. Other teams walk to the plate and they've got two strikes. So if they swing and miss, it's a huge, huge issue. If you're Houston and you miss on Diggs, let's say it doesn't go well. Yes, you've given up a second-round pick.
Right, you cut bait.
You're
move
still
on.
Back right. in the batter's box with one strike. Like, you are still up at the plate, and that's where I view this offseason as largely a missed opportunity. And I'm not even, if you want to continue the baseball analogy, I'm not even asking for a home run or a grand slam. If you look at the Colts offseason right now, and I can go one more baseball on you.
What is it a double? What is it?
They're only on base via drop third strike.
Yeah, okay.
Right? I mean, right, isn't yeah. that
the
Joe
ball,
Flacco and Raekwon
away.
Davis?
Well,
I mean, right
I mean,
now,
it is.
You've made two backup acquisitions. And where's the single? Where's the double? And not even at wideout or tight end. Where is it in the secondary? Where Chris Bauer's own words said, you know, I failed Gus Bradley. I didn't do enough to help out our defensive staff. Well, where's the help now? As you sit here on April 4th.
I think the fairest criticism, I'm going to go back to AR here in a second. The fairest criticism is at corner right now. It's the defensive backs, right? I mean, they just brought
certainly.
Blackman back.
Yeah,
I mean,
certainly.
That because they kept Gus Bradley and because Ballard really put it all on him. I did not give him enough. That to me is where, and that goes back to L'Jarius Sneed. Like, I didn't want to hear from Colts fans yesterday on the Diggs thing or even some of the offensive stuff. To me, it was more about Gus Bradley in the defensive backfield. I wanted to also bring up that you mentioned, I'm not disagreeing with you. I want to bring this another way. Stephen Holder had a tweet last night. I forget who it was. It was an NFL guy who was doing a thread on what the Colts are doing free agency-wise and everything else. And he made the point of, you know, the Colts aren't crazy to think that continuity, bringing back Shane Steichen, you know, having Anthony Richardson back, and then bringing back guys that everyone around here loves. I mean, everyone wanted Jonathan Taylor and Michael Pittman and everything else, that bringing those guys all back together after, you know, kind of the odd season that they had last year, that's not a crazy thing to rely on. I think what's hurting us, I think here's what I think is hurting.
Should that
everything.
Be the end-all be-all, though? That's the argument. Like, that's the end-all be-all. They, again, go back to the baseball analogy. I'm not saying Diggs. Where's your single and double?
Well, I guess here's what I would say. If would it make you feel better if Grover Stewart went to the New York Jets and you brought in another defensive lineman?
Well, play this out, okay? Houston let Jonathan Gernard walk,
and they brought in
a very valuable player.
And they brought in Hunter.
They brought in Hunter, and then they did other stuff.
Yeah, and then they did more.
So, like, that's the question. If you sacrifice, yes, Grover would be a loss.
Diggs is more. They already had a nice wide receiver room, and then they bring in a guy who's 108 catches.
And then, like, even like a Denico Autry, I mean, that's a single or a double type move. Where is that? For Indy, that's the question that I have of you haven't even done the little stuff. Like, you know, Minshew for Flacco is what, a wash?
It's a wash, yeah.
And then Raekwon Davis is going to play what? Yeah. You know, 20-some snaps a game. Like,
he's not a sack guy, so yeah,
like,
it's
we
a
all
wash.
Want the glitz and the glamour of a Diggs move.
Right.
I get fans that obviously when it happens to your biggest rival, I think it's fair to say moving forward, that's where it really burns. But even if you just want to take a step back and, you know, crawl before you walk, where's the crawling?
Yeah.
Right now, there's none of that.
That's fair, and it goes back to me, to the defensive backs. Here's another thing, and I know we're up against a break here in a couple minutes, but I wanted to throw this out there. Last year, the Texans got to see their quarterback be special. The problem that we have, or that I feel like the problem that I have, and even some Colts fans can't throw into the formula of next season, and it's probably a lot of distrust with the organization, distrust maybe with the weapons, distrust with Chris Ballard himself. And I really feel this way, KB, that the Texans got to see Stroud. Colts fans really did not get to see Anthony Richardson. So the Colts are selling you what? Anthony Richardson, we've had Stephen on all year. Stephen Holder. The Colts are selling you what? having Anthony Richardson back is going to make all of this so much better. You guys don't even get it, how dynamic he is behind the scenes. And so now, as a fan or someone analyzing the Colts, you got to believe, quite frankly, in a general manager that you don't believe in. When he says something, you roll your eyes at. And as special as AR, you know, look, you mentioned 170 some odd snaps. You still got to believe something that you really have not seen. The Texans got to see C.J. Stroud emerge as the team leader. They got to see him be special, to win road games, to win in Indianapolis, and then win a playoff game. They wake up every morning with national analysts and pundits loving up all on their quarterback, C.J. Stroud. And that may happen this next offseason. We'll see what happens this year with Anthony Richardson. But I think that's what it comes down to. The Colts are trying to sell you, oh, you guys don't get it. Anthony Richardson is going to change this franchise and is going to gloss.
So why not maximize that?
He's going to gloss over all the ills just like Mahomes does. I can't answer the question on the doubles. That's where Chris
Ballard, at it twofold.
That's the fair criticism of Chris Ballard. That's the fair part of all of this.
Yeah, I look at it, and I want to hit on that. But again, back to the baseball thing. Again, you can go grand slam home run. That's sexy. Everyone wants that. You want to be the headliner on ESPN. But again, where's the single double? Where's the veteran cornerback move just to stabilize thing? Where's another pass catcher to help you just kind of, okay, let's provide a little
right.
bit
or a
of,
solid pass of, rusher.
So
who
now
gets
you're not
seven
forcing these needs
year.
In the draft, because if you go draft, you know, whatever. Let's say your first two picks are offense. Well, now we're still talking about the issues in the secondary. Let's say your first two picks are in the secondary. Well, now you're saying, okay, what support did you give Anthony Richardson directly this offseason? But again, to me, the continued nature to the stubbornness, and in regards to the rookie contract quarterback, if you truly believe in him, you think there's greatness there, and you're bullish on it.
Do too much. Do more than you need
it
to. Right.
When you have the opportunity, like you have seen other AFC teams do. Or the flip side of that, if you're unsure of it, this is still the time to over-support, where the risks now are not the same risks 5 and 6 years into Anthony Richardson's rookie deal. At some point, you can't even entertain a Diggs type of trade. But why not take a swing right now? It's a second-round pick. He comes off the books next year. Like, it's not the end of the world for Houston if they make this. It doesn't set the franchise back
any. No.
Like, this is, to me...
It can only help him.
A high return, albeit in the short term, but... It can clearly help you, and certainly it gives them, in my opinion, I would think, the best wideout core, certainly in the AFC South.
It also gives you more clarification on Richardson's ceiling, because if he thrives, then you're like, okay, he's the guy we thought he was. If he fails, you're like, well, now that fifth-year option and that contract extension, that gets a little more dicey, so it'd be nice to have more clarification in that regard, and you don't have it.
Yeah, regardless, yesterday, Colts fans not happy. On the other end, I have one more lingering question with the entire Colts saga. You said you had two stats with Purdue, right? Two stats with Purdue, KB? Is that what
two.
It was?
Two for the Boilers.
So, what are those two stats? I have one more thing here on the Colts. We'll keep that conversation. Scott Agnes, Pacer Conversation at 8:30. We're hanging out with you until 10 o'clock.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Did you know St. Jude has one of the largest pediatric sickle cell programs in the country? St. Jude freely shares the discoveries they make, and every child saved at St. Jude means doctors and scientists worldwide can use this knowledge to save thousands more children everywhere. Join me today in helping to fight sickle cell disease by becoming a partner in hope. Call now 1-800-411-9898. That's 1-800-411-9898.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
St. Jude treats children across the country and around the world, regardless of color, creed, or financial capability, because they're committed to love and care for their neighbors. Join me in helping St. Jude give every child with cancer the chance they deserve to survive. Together, we can save more lives. Call now to become a partner in hope. 1-800-411-9898. That's 1-800-411-9898.
Up call 93.5-107.5 The Fan.
I must say, the music selections by Mark Dykton on this Thursday morning have me feeling like I'm back in a high school basement.
I know. I was trying to look for songs that are like 20 years old, so that makes me feel really
Scott Agnes is at a North Central party right now.
Oh, yeah. This is like senior year high school blasting Petey Pablo in the hallways.
Yeah. Edited version, maybe if the parents are in the car.
The Walmart version, yes.
Yeah, certainly on that. Again, we'll get back into the Purdue combo with our Purdue guest of the day, Konzo Martin, in an hour. But it is Pacers time with Scott Agnes from Fieldhouse Files. Scott, I think you can go two ways for last night. The final 90 seconds, just everything that could go wrong did go wrong. But I've said it all morning long. I thought Jenny Busek was pretty spot on at halftime. "We gave them hope," was her direct quote. I thought just that second quarter all of a sudden took the Nets thinking, oh, let's not think about Cancun just yet. We got a chance to win this game and, you know, maybe feel better about ourselves.
Yeah, and this was one of those cases, KB, where you want to close the door early on a team that's already, you know, removed from the conversation from the playoffs. So they truly have nothing to play for except their own job. So you have guys out there going off for career highs and seeing some unusual things. And yeah, that second quarter absolutely gave them hope, gave them life, gave them some fun to play for. Like, if you're down by 20, it's the second quarter the other way, then you're kind of dragging going through those final two quarters. But it was those middle two quarters that really cost the Pacers. You hear all the time, right, from coaches, like, hey, that last play or that last minute didn't hurt us. It was really this sequence or that. I felt that last game. Everything that led up to those 90 seconds is really what cost them. Yes, Siakam scoring 13 points in a row gave them hope and gave them a chance late. But everything else that led up to those final 90 seconds was just troubling for a team that has something truly to play for against a team, something like that. Now, that was unacceptable last night.
Scott Agnes with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Scott, I know that the Heat and the Pacers play on Sunday, and I know that Philly and the Heat play here coming up tonight or tomorrow, but you look at it, you wake up, you're the 7th seed right now, and boy, Philly with Embiid back, they're going to be nipping at your heels here in the final week. The loss last night to me, I don't see how it doesn't come back and kind of bite him in the ass. Do you feel that way after watching that game, that this is a game that we're absolutely going to point to here in the next couple weeks?
Absolutely. There's been many, as I think we've discussed on the show, but this one being so recent, and so it's going to be the first one that everyone turns to, right? I've looked at the schedule between those teams you referenced, and the Pacers had the easiest schedule. They had a schedule that you think sets them up well and gives them an opportunity to close strong and then head into the playoffs knowing a seed, because, of course, you don't want to mess around with 7, 8, 9, 10 and have to have the play-in situation. 6 is at minimum what you want. To me, they should be there or at least inside that based on the way in which they've been playing for much of the season. But it all goes back to how they handle these teams that aren't very good, the bottom of the Eastern Conference standings and such. And there's been now probably 8 to 10 games that you just shake your head about. A couple others, including being Portland,
yep,
who's at the bottom of the standings, and you lost to them both times. Those are tough ones to swallow, but this one's the most recent, so it's absolutely going to stand out.
He is Scott Agnes. Great work, Fieldhouse Files. He'll keep you updated here as it's a lot of standings watch down the stretch, and then we'll see what exactly it looks like for the Pacers with 5 to go here in the regular season playoff-wise. Scott, when the Pascal Siakam trade happened, you know, I was a little lukewarm on it, but I also thought to myself, you know what, end of game situations, the Pacers now got two guys they can turn to. And I mean, hell, to be fair, you saw it last night with Siakam. I mean, he had 3 or 4, you know, straight buckets there I don't know what the Nets were doing defensively, putting Dennis Schroeder on him. But the Pacers have been, frankly, awful in the clutch here over the last couple of months. They get in these close game situations, and then seemingly, and I know Halliburton's been inconsistent, but they just haven't been able to win the close games. What can you put your finger on for that when they seemingly have a couple of different options they can go to?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. No team has been worse out of the All-Star break in clutch situations than the Pacers. Just 1-7 this season, the clutch being, you know, a five-point game in the final 5 minutes. To me, it speaks of inexperience. It speaks of a lot of new guys being dependent on this. And also keep in mind what happened around the All-Star break. You had a couple of trades. You moved on in that time from two of your most experienced guys in Bruce Brown and Buddy Hield. And so not only did you lose experience, but now you're throwing new guys into that mix. I think Rick mentioned it on your show a couple weeks ago. We got to be tired of making everything a learning lesson and just go do it. And that's now, I think, what I've at least seen here over the last couple of weeks is you can lean on, yeah, hey, this team's getting good experience. They're getting all these lessons. But we should be past that now. Now we're at the end of the season. You've had a lot of those experiences. You've had a lot of those mistakes in losing to the teams you necessarily shouldn't or taking guys lightly. Carlisle warned us many times, and even the last time after the last game, I was kind of laughing about it a little bit. I was like, really? This team? Nope. I clearly they do not. And I thought into the game, I was just watching some body language, and you could just tell everyone was kind of on pins and needles. And you know, Carlisle was on the sideline making sure guys had their hands up defensively, just reminding them things like that. To me, it reeks of inexperience and a lot of guys having not gone through maybe some of this as a group together. And in fairness, too, last night specifically, KB, you removed Miles from a situation. There you lose your longest tenured player. So that's more experience move from the equation last night.
Boy, Noah Clowney dominated last night, so you certainly felt the loss of Miles. I think no other starter.
He averages 3 points per game. Had reached double figures once this season.
Yeah,
that's how rare that performance was.
Nate Oates could get that out of a big man from Alabama Saturday night. We might be talking upset here. Scott Agnes, Fieldhouse Files with us. Scott, the last thing I try to do when speaking on this show is to speak in hyperbole or overreaction. Is this the biggest regular season game in how many years, Pacers Heat coming up on Sunday? Because just like on paper, to me, it yeah. just seems like astronomically big.
Yeah, no, that's reasonable. I mean, this team hasn't reached the playoffs since 2020, so you'd probably go back to that, right? Before that, they've kind of been eliminated from the conversation. Right now, they're exactly about where many people, including myself, thought they would finish, that 42-43 wins. However, bringing Pascal Siakam into the conversation by the trade deadline, I think it certainly raised their floor and raised their ceiling. That was my expectations. I think for the most part that's happened. They've just had several different situations they've had to deal with, including Halliburton kind of getting injured and then getting out of the rut. Now, the good news is Tyrese seems to be out of that rut and back to his normal self. For the most part here. Now he's having to – now they just have all these new pieces and these new lineups trying to figure out and make work together. And still, I go back, KB, it's underrated how much of an influence and impact Buddy Hield had on the team on and off the court. I mean, the last home game, Tyrese is on his phone FaceTiming Buddy about a situation. Like, if that doesn't tell you his importance to this team, I don't know what does. And so they're missing that. But – that's no excuse. They can't have any excuses at this point. You're right. Going into that Miami game, we're all going to be watching how they handle Philly before that. But then on Sunday, that's going to be a big-time game that I'm certain is the sellout at Gainbridge Fieldhouse.
Scott Agnes with us here on the Wake Up Call on this Thursdays from Fieldhouse Files, and he joins us on the Payless Liquors Hotline. You guys have alluded to Miles Turner. I wanted to dig a little bit deeper. I know he's kind of a lightning bolt, a lightning rod, if you will, with the fan base, but boy, he didn't play last night, and you saw how badly they needed him. With that finger issue, any theory, any thought going forward? I mean, we know the bigs there with OKC. We know the game Sunday there against Miami. Any thoughts, any gut feeling about how long he may be out?
No, it seems like a situation there. You see, you know, associate head athletic trainer Carl Eaton having to like pop it back in place type thing. It just seems like he's just going to be having to battle with that annoyance I think, for the rest of the season. Hopefully, and we haven't heard anything outside of the fact next x-rays being negative, which is a great sign, because if there was a hairline fracture or anything like that right away, they would have seen that on the x-ray. So that was hugely favorable. Last night we saw that finger and his middle finger on his right hand, his shooting hand, of course, taped together. Reminded me of Reggie Miller back in the day with that kind of like finger sleeve that he always wore. But the fact that it was so painful and uncomfortable that he had to come back in and shoot two games ago left-handed tells me everything about kind of, I think, what that pain or comfortability was with that right hand. So it's definitely going to have an impact on him the remainder of the season. It's just to what extent. And it's hard to say until, he talks with us here in the media and explains maybe what he's feeling out there. But you're right. That's definitely like a yellow flag for the remainder of the season to see what he looks like and how he is playing, Andy, with that situation.
Scott, last one for me, and shifting gears. I know you certainly have followed the Fever and the Caitlin Clark thing pretty closely. I mean, the numbers from the Elite Eight game, just incredible from a TV viewership standpoint, 12.3 million. Andy and I rattled off how many more viewers that game had than NBA Finals games from last year, College Bowl games. I mean, you name it, it pretty much had more viewers. When will we get – I mean, I guess they wait till after the draft, a week from Monday, but like, how do you think TV will look for Caitlin Clark in her rookie season? I'm unfamiliar with how the WNBA does it. I know last year the Fever were on a variety of channels. It was almost impossible to follow it all. Is it just a given they're going to be on ABC, ESPN every single game, or is that just not how it operates?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of like weekend games and such, I got to believe that ABC and ESPN have raked up their demands and requests for the Caitlin Clark experience. On top of that, you have Aaliyah Boston, who's certainly attractive on the court, and she's going to be involved in their broadcast this weekend as well at the Final Four in Cleveland. In addition to her work with USA Basketball having their training camp leading into Olympics this summer, and Caitlin would be participating in that if not for her team in Iowa being there, of course. But no, that's something I'm very curious about, Ryan, myself coming up in terms of, I want to see, does this mean the Fever will get more games on Bally Sports Indiana and what that looks like? Because in general, I want to say something like 20 of their games were on like feverbasketball.com or the Fever Facebook app. I got to believe it'll be, whether it's Amazon Prime where games were at or Bally Sports, those things will be picked up here, KB, because the impact she continues to have and everyone that wants to not only be a part of her story but follow her story has gone crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that is certainly an understatement on that. And Scott, great stuff, man. I know it's a busy time of year, and playoffs going to get underway here in a couple weeks. We'll see where the Pacers exactly fall playing or series wise. Thanks for the time.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
When St. Jude opened in 1962, childhood cancer was considered incurable. Since then, St. Jude has helped push the overall survival rate from 20% to more than 80%. St. Jude won't stop until no child dies from cancer. Join me today in supporting St. Jude by calling 1-800-411-9898. That's 1-800-411-9898 to become a partner in hope. Your gift to St. Jude could last a lifetime.
I appreciate Scott Agnes joining us, and the 92-year-old Bill Elbert, super fan of Purdue, he joined us as well. You miss any of those conversations, check it all out, 1075thefan.com. In fact, we have the podcast center, the new one, within the last couple weeks, and then on top of it, you'll see right there on the front page of the website all of the great Purdue-centric interviews that you may have missed. I know Matt Painter was on yesterday with JMV. That was a great conversation. We had Dakota Mathias earlier. Rob Blackman's been on a couple shows. I know JMV had Robbie Hummel as well. And we have Konzo Martin coming up here in just a minute. He'll be on the Podcast Center in short order.
Again, Purdue coming up Saturday nights, obviously a lot of interest for this man. And you talk about a busy man introduced at Missouri State earlier this week. And certainly we'll have some eyes on Purdue here coming up in the Final Four. Konzo Martin joins us now. Coach, I'm a little unsure of like how to introduce you properly. Purdue legend, dad of Purdue player, or new Missouri State head coach? Where should I go?
No, certainly not a Purdue legend. You got three or four of those Purdue legends playing this weekend. That's how you can take me off that list now. These guys are doing great things. But no, man, it's just exciting times to be the head coach here at Missouri State. I'm overjoyed by it.
Coach Martin, in my book, a Purdue legend, and again, the dad of Chase Martin on Purdue's team is with us here right now. Coach, I don't know how much of our audience has heard the story, so if you don't mind, could you walk us through you inside of Little Caesars Arena as that second half clock ticked down, and maybe you had to make a beeline for the exit?
Oh, man, that was wild. So basically, we followed him every step of the way. Of course, my son is on the team. Coach Painter, we were teammates there. So Paul Lusser, I grew up together. Brandon, like a brother to me. So that's Elliot Bloom. So it's all great relationships there. But they don't get calls from me about playing time. So I don't do any of that. I just watch the game. But, you know, we were in the arena, exciting times. And I'm sitting right, Matt Waddell is sitting right in front of me. So we're going blow for blow just on anything within the game. And it was probably, I would say, 6 minutes left in the game, and we had the leagues. I had a flight to get here to Missouri State, so we had a flight at 6 p.m. So we left out of the game, and Roberta's looking at me, my wife looking at me like, what? And she knew, because she wanted to stretch it as long as she could. I said, we stretch this thing, we could be in trouble. So we got out, I told Waddell, and I told, you know, we're going to get out. So we got right in the car. As soon as we got in the car, Roberta had it on the phone. We tried to find it on the radio. I think we found it, but I'm driving on the highway and trying to look at it on her phone. And she's like, why don't you just drive the car? And she just tried to turn up as loud as she could. But it was really exciting, man. It felt like I was on the floor playing. It was that level of energy. It's like, wow, this is a great feeling. But it was one of those feelings, man, you go back when we lost to Duke in the tournament and all the times, even when Robbie and Juwan, those guys were there, when Brian Cardinal, those guys almost made it to the Final Four with Coach Katie, you just start reliving all those things. Because, again, even though you're removed, and you become older, those guys are kind of like your little brothers. And now I'm a father figure with these guys so much younger. Now you want to see them do it, and now to see it happen, and just great to see Coach here to be present. And Matt has done a phenomenal job with his program, stayed the course, stayed consistent, man. It's a true joy to watch.
Konzo Martin with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Coach, if that's true, if it was around the six-minute mark, you know, the score was 56-56 probably when you got up from your seat, or maybe 58-58. So God bless you for being able to do that. Listen, it's an easy question. It's probably a difficult answer. You know, back in the Final Four, but to, you know, now that you're here, but to win a national title, what would it mean, as you said, for the brotherhood, for the Purdue community?
Oh, I think it'd be great. Now, I would say I think it would be great for the program, the work Matt has put in, staff, the players, the community, because the one thing about the Purdue fan base, they've stayed the course. They've been great. They've always been great to me. It's one of those fan bases that you enjoy because they care. Some get disgruntled here, and that I understand that, but they've always been there, and I think that's a great joy when you have a fan base that's committed to it. And you're talking about a great institution, a great product, great academic, all those things. So I think it's great. But for me, I mean, and again, great for all the former players. Glenn, I have a text stream with like 12, 13 other guys. We play together. Woody Austin, Glenn Robson, Brad, all of us. We talk. We all the time. We're just going. And it's great to see, man. These guys are so happy. But for me, I'm just talking for me. Whether they win it or not, it's all the same. My love never changed. And because, again, I know how hard it is to do that. And what Matt has done a phenomenal job with his staff. They've stayed steady in the storm. And that's a consistency that most men that don't have when times get hard. They wavered. Matt, his convictions are real. He's a phenomenal man, person, teacher, and leader. And when you stay steady in the storm, you're able to overcome crisis. You have a chance to have a lot of success, and they've done that, man. So for me, again, as a father, I'm happy whatever happens. I mean, winning a championship for me doesn't change how I feel about them, the program, and all that. It's still the same, man, because when you become a father and a parent, man, you know how hard it is and the emotion that goes into it, the anxiety, the stress, the worries, the doubts, the fears, that can take a toll on you. So, man, whatever they do, I'm happy.
He is the one and only Konzo Martin. Right now, head coach Missouri State. Come Saturday night, 6:09, that heart rate will be full throttle as he watches his Boilers and his son, Chase Martin, play in the Final Four. Coach, I want to go there. If I'm not mistaken, I thought Chase had some Ivy League interest coming out of high school. Yeah. I find it so ironic that you look on this team, you brought up Matt Waddell, look at several of the walk-ons, and we're talking about sons of the dads were Matt Painter's teammates. Like, I don't think you see that everywhere. Why did you want, assuming you did, why did you want Chase to go to Purdue, play for Matt Painter when he had clearly some other interest?
Well, I think what happens, now, the Ivy League, he part of it, he likes being around his mom, so I want to be clear of that, but I think with the Ivy Leagues, he didn't want to do all the extracurriculars as far as the community service work, and all he wanted to do is play basketball, video games, obviously doing schoolwork, and hang out with his buddies. So Purdue was a great opportunity for him, and I called Payne. Payne was great about it. And but what I learned in all of this with my first son, who obviously went to Purdue, but what I learned in this, as a coach, you recruit one way. You think this kid can fit in your program. You sell him the program. He's talented enough. But in the process of understanding and studying as a father, when my children started going through it, it's like, I got to have him around good people in a good environment. Because the older I get, I mean, 52 now, it's like, send your kids off to college. For my son, he came down to Purdue and Cal Berkeley with my oldest son. He said he wanted to go to Purdue. And at that time, I was in California. And I'm like, man, all the way back to Purdue. I like Purdue, but that's a long way away from home. So you start thinking in terms of that. So if they're going to go away, at least be around good people. And I think for me, because life can be tough. I mean, so who can I go lean on when I'm struggling with something in life? Mom and dad can't be there. Because you got to go through. The storms will present themselves, but you got to go through the storm. And I'd rather have a safe umbrella protecting me and the staff at Purdue to help my son find his way. So that was the biggest thing for me in making those decisions. And I don't mean to jump off the track here. And I think when you see a lot of young men transferring from schools, it's because they made decisions based on the wrong things. Yes, if you can get and I'm going to be clear, you can get $100,000, $1 million, whatever you get name members like, you get all of that. But what about the impact of the people around you? Who's going to help you with stress, worry, doubts, fears, struggles, anxieties? Who's going to really help you? What coach is going to value outside of just the basketball game? That is very important. So I think our decision-making have to be better. And that was one of the biggest things for me with both my sons. They went to Purdue. And the people around them, like Matt Painter, I'll give you this, because a lot of people see Matt Painter as the coach and coach his team. You don't really see behind the scenes. Matt Painter would go eat lunch with my oldest son, Josh. Now, Josh didn't play any sports at Purdue, but Matt Painter would take time out of his schedule to go eat lunch with Josh. Now, he didn't call me and say, I'm going to eat lunch with Josh. He did it on his own. I found out a year later. I mean, so that's wow. The guy that's coaching this program. So what I'm saying is, we have to be better as parents in assisting our children in making decisions. Because I always struggle when parents say, well, it's up to him. I'm going to let him make the decision. So, okay, I know your son's a very intelligent young man, so you're going to allow an 18-year-old to make an adult decision, because really 18, you can't see. I couldn't see. Purdue worked out for me great, but I couldn't see Purdue at 18 how I see it at 50. So I think parents have to really step in and say, okay, here's your choices, and here's the reason why.
The great Konzo Martin with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Missouri State head coach disappointed that a few days ago. Obviously, Purdue Grady joins us here on the wake-up call on this Thursday. You've said so many great things about Matt Painter. Basketball-wise, what has impressed you the most about this team and what he's done with this particular season?
Well, I mean, again, Matt whenever he decides to hang it up, he'll be a Hall of Fame coach. So I think that part is that's understood. But I think what makes Matt great, like most leaders, he's earned the right to lead by the things he's endured and suffered. You know, it's the bumps in the road. First time taking over Purdue, it was like 9 wins. Then he had a couple years of back-to-back losses. And then also let me make some adjustments to what I'm doing, how I recruit and all that. Now you see where he is now at the top of the food chain. You're talking about coaches and leaders and pillars in the communities. So he's done that. But he's earned that right because of what he's endured, and he stayed the course. And I think that's very important. But also a credit to that, he's done all the great things, had the great staff around him. But a credit to that is Purdue, the athletic director, the president, that stayed with a guy because they knew what they had. And here we are.
He is Konzo Martin. He's with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Whether he likes it or not, I'll call him the Purdue legend and, of course, dad of Chase Martin and Missouri State head coach. Konzo, we appreciate the time. Last one from me. I thought the scenes post-game while you were going 90 to the airport were just awesome inside a Little Caesars Arena. Zach Edey, Matt Painter's embrace, the Gene Cady moment, Robbie Hummel's emotion, all of it. What will your emotions be like, you think, Saturday night and even Monday, you know, as a dad and as a former player?
Man, I hope I don't have tears running down my face, but that could happen. Because I've never been afraid to cry in front of anybody, so that's not the case. But it just it'll be a phenomenal feeling, man, just to be in that arena. And I'll tell you this. This is a true story. So when I first got into coaching in 2000, Coach Cady had me on. I don't know how I said this and why I said it to myself. I said I would never go into the Final Four arena unless I'm coaching in it or playing in it. And I was done playing. So here we are. This will be the first time I've ever walked into the arena in the Final Four. It's the first time since 2000. I've never walked in it. So this will be the first time walking to the arena. And I'll just be overjoyed with the excitement. Just a go time, and it's just to sit in there, man. Just the joy of it, man. It's just a great feeling, man, because I don't take life for granted. Every little thing matters to me, and for me, the power belongs to God, because I'm standing here to see it, to feel it, to live it, and I count it all joy.
Unbelievable stuff with Konzo Martin right here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Coach, we can't thank you enough. We know it's been a whirlwind of a week for you. Congrats on the Missouri State gig. Safe travels out there to Phoenix. And as a parent, can only imagine what your emotions will be Saturday night. Soak them up. Enjoy it. And thanks for the time.
Thank you guys for having me.
All right, it's not very often that Mark Dykton brings a guest on and shares a laugh with said guest. Granted, it's not very often we have a guest that is 92 years old and had the quote of the century in Dana Benbow's article, outstanding piece on the Indy Star. Bill Elbert, as a Purdue fan, said this, "I can't die until Purdue wins one." 92 years old, Mark Dykton. What did Bill say to you just now before we bring him on?
I just told him, hey, we've got about 60 seconds, and he said he's not going anywhere. 60 seconds is, he's been here long enough, he can wait for 60 more seconds.
92 years and just what? What are we doing the math here? Under 48 hours, a little over 48 hours before Purdue plays in the Final Four, and for everyone, and most importantly for Bill, we hope it's Monday night for a national title. Bill Elbert, diehard Purdue fan, good morning to you, Bill. How are you?
Good morning. Pretty good for an old man.
Are you pumped for Saturday night?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
Now,
I and Purdue have a bad history.
Bill, are you optimistic?
Always hopeful. Oh, yes. Yep. Both teams have got the ball clubs, but we've got Edey.
Yes, you do. Bill Elbert with us here.
Purdue fans in unison saying
yes,
that, Andy,
on the
right?
Payless Liquors Hotline. How does it feel to be 92 years old and now be a media star doing all these newspaper interviews and sports talk radio interviews at 92 years old? How about that?
It's not too comfortable for me. I stay away from the publicity. It's enjoyable.
Now, Bill, you had a quote in Dana's article. I hope I live long enough to see all my grandchildren graduate from high school. The Cubs win a World Series, and the Boilermakers win an NCAA national title. It sounds like the first and the second have been accomplished.
You got the first two accomplished.
And now you wait. What is your favorite thing, Bill, about this year's team? Obviously, you mentioned Zach Edey, but what do you love about this year's team for Matt Painter?
Oh, it's a well-balanced team. They've got the guards. Smith is above-average guard. You've got talent pretty much all the way through it, but, of course, Edey tops it off. He just... You can't duplicate him.
Oh, that is spot on.
Outstanding ball player.
No, you cannot duplicate him at all. Where does your Purdue fandom begin, Bill? Where did it start?
Right here. I was born in Rensselaer, Indiana, at Jasper County Hospital, and lived in Goodland. You don't even know where Goodland is, do you?
I'm not going to lie, Bill. I had to map it a little bit. Goodland, just so give it to me here. It's just northwest of West Lafayette.
Yes, big metropolis there. And Purdue was just a natural. And I saw my first college game there. Should have seen a lot more, but. Purdue was just a natural for me.
Bill Elbert with us, 92 years old. Bill, how will you and the family, what will be the scene there? How will you watch the game on Saturday against NC State?
Well, it won't be at Purdue. We'll watch it here on the TV, and that's where I have been most of the time. I had years ago, and for the life of me, too many years, I had the season tickets to Purdue. But usually, I used to sit by the radio and listen. Now I'll watch it on TV and enjoy it.
He's 6:09 on Saturday night. Bill Elbert will be sitting there hoping to see his team advance to Monday night. 92 years old. He's waited quite a while to see this opportunity for Purdue. Certainly seen it a couple times, but nothing would be the same as getting to Monday night. Bill, your favorite all-time Purdue player? If I put you on the spot there, who knows? It might be Zach Edey after Monday night, but who would be your favorite all-time Purdue player?
Probably Joe Sexton. You know Joe Sexton.
Yeah,
you know of him.
Certainly, but you're dating me a little bit with that there.
But now I'm in trouble. I've got to remember dates like that. But at one time, this area was heavily populated with coaches. Benton County, I think, had something like 8 small schools. Each one of them had a coach. And I don't remember the year. But somebody organized a team, and we went up. Oh, there's the memory. I can't remember where. But Killen formed a team and went up North La Crosse, Wisconsin, I believe it was. And we won that thing. We had Joe Sexton, Daddy Thornburg. Oh, had a great team. And always been closely associated with basketball.
Joe Sexton, of course, an Indy product, also coach here at Butler for a while. Bill, yeah. Were you a fan, or what did you make, I guess, of the old Gene Katie-Bob Knight rivalry? We so often talk about that from opposing fan bases. What did you think of Coach Katie and Coach Knight?
I tried a little coach. I wish it could have been more like Knight, but that just wasn't my personality. But I've enjoyed the local basketball scene, and it's been fun. It's been fun.
92-year-old Bill Elbert hanging out with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline on this Thursday on The Fan. Of course, the piece last week in The Star about him, diehard Purdue fan for all of these decades. You know, I'm wondering, when Indiana was really winning and Bob Knight was really winning, did any of your, I don't know if you have any family members that are IU fans, but any of your friends ever try to convert you over to be a Hoosiers fan and get you away from Purdue? Did that ever happen over the years?
Absolutely not.
What did you tell him? You said no, right?
Right.
Blasphemy there by Andy Sweeney.
That was Indiana fan.
Bill, we'll end with this, and I loved your daughter's quote, Nancy, who has helped us out in setting this up, so appreciate Nancy saying, you are the most optimistic and positive person that everyone knows. What do you think your emotions will be like if indeed we get to Monday night and it is Purdue under the confetti cutting down the nets in Phoenix?
You know, young man, that's hard for me to believe. I've been a Purdue fan all of my life, and there's been a lot of lean years in there. But it's hard for me to visualize that. I'm hopeful.
Well, you should be hopeful, because I think it is going to happen, and maybe we can get a piece of that net on Monday night, if indeed it does happen, to make a trip over to Bill Elbert's home. Bill, we can't thank you enough for this time. It's an amazing story, and I loved reading it in the Star. Again, shout-out to Dana Benbow for that. Tell Nancy thank you, and good luck to your Boilers coming up Saturday night.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.